Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Jamie Calvin is the founder of The Invisible Institute. It's a nonprofit journalism organization on the South Side. 2021 Pulitzer Prize winner for national reporting, who wrote about that Lakeview Scream, the Scream ad that you saw 2 weekends ago, maybe for the first time during the Bears game. It's been running a lot ever since on TV and online. And he said, viewed on its own terms as an exercise in the dark art of fear-mongering, the ad is perversely effective. Although we cannot tell for sure in that ad, we assume the three attackers are men. We assume they are black. You remember the ad of a woman getting mugged in the Lakeview neighborhood, and what you hear are her screams. They are predators. She is their prey, he wrote. It's impossible not to respond viscerally to the sound of her primal terror. And then he says, her piercing screams have a particular resonance for me because I hear them in the voice of my wife. On a Sunday morning, earlier this summer, we were the victims of a similar crime. Jamie, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be with you.
It was a well-written piece. You and your wife survived a similar mugging. Somebody pointed a gun at you. They sped away with your wallet. Your wife emerged on the scene and screamed, and you said you still hear her voice in your ears, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, these things stay with you. And, you know, I think it's really important in assessing something like the Lakeview Scream ad not to in any way discount the realities of violent crime in the city. You know, I would never want to be understood to have done that. But I think there's an independent phenomena of fear of crime that an ad like this exploits. And, you know, there's a long tradition of doing this for political ends. I mean, I think the most famous instance is the Willie Horton ad during the, the 1988 presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I thought it worth writing about because, you know, in this age of disinformation and where there's talk about fake news, this really happened. You know, this happened to a woman walking down a street in Lakeview, you know, as a similar crime happened to us. So what's reprehensible about this kind of manipulation of our fears is not because it didn't happen. You know, it's another kind of dynamic.
You know what I hear is that people say, is it manipulating us or is it informing us? You know, the people that run that ad say, hey, it happened. Maybe we ought to talk about that. Let's come to grips with the reality of it. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I think that's what is challenging about it. It happened, and that means that there's a kind of care that needs to be taken in creating context and perspective on what happened. You know, and what the ad does is it's 30 seconds long. It presents, you know, from a Ring camera, a doorbell camera, the incident. We see the incident as you described it. And at the end, superimposed on pictures of the governor and the mayor, the words appear, how much worse does it have to get? So there's a message here that is pretty explicit, but it's still kind of subtext, you know, which is an image of the city just overrun by criminals. And I think what that does is it kind of disables. First, we're all subject to being, you know, these fears for the people you love, the people closest to you, arise from our human core, right? I mean, these are just fundamental human qualities. And if some political proposition, crime is out of control, the mayor and the governor and those engaged in criminal justice reform are to blame, and you tie that to that almost primal fear, you know, we lose any kind of critical perspective.
Well, you see how it works, but I mean, yeah. So I think the perspective some people are hearing is, no, the city is overrun with crime. If that's playing on our fears, it's not an inaccurate representation of the reality. I live and work downtown every day. I don't live downtown. I work downtown. I live in the city, and I champion its safety, and I champion its vibrancy. But it's getting harder to do all the time, maybe because of the perception, maybe because of ads like this.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think, I I'm not minimizing. I mean, we're still shaken by what happened to us this, you know, earlier in the summer. And I think that's all the more reason for us to work together for a kind of clarity about what's happening in the city. And I think that, you know, I try to raise this in the piece in the Tribune. I think, you know, in addition to the our vulnerability through those fears to being manipulated, there's a way, we may just be wired this way, but I think there's a way in which the violent act, whatever it is, just occupies the foreground, center stage of our imaginations, and it kind of blots out, it eclipses the rest of life, right? I mean, the reason we recognize violence as violence is because it's such a departure from the norm. Well, the norm is that on any given day in Lakeview, on any given day, you know, where I live on the South Side, you know, there's a huge amount of human care, solidarity, neighborliness.
Yeah.
And when we lose sight of that and feel like we're just completely under assault, we're kind of disabled. Does that make sense? I mean, I think
it does,
almost like an optical illusion.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. I'm going to pause here. We're going to do the news. I want you to just come back and speak to two things. Jamie Calvin's on a phone line. He's the founder of the Invisible Institute. It's a journalism organization on the South Side that received the 2021 Pulitzer Prize for national reporting. I mean, not that they're going to say in a 30-second ad what they're going to do about it, but is it incumbent upon them to say, okay, here's how we fix this? Number two, at the end of your incident, you tell the story, the postscript to the mugging that you and your wife suffered, which is kind of heartwarming in a way. Jamie Calvin, he's that guy you read about in the Tribune who was mugged not that long ago. And when you've seen that scream ad on TV where the woman in Lakeview is getting mugged and you hear her scream for 30 seconds, it reminded him of something he and his wife went through. Bad guys were taking his wallet. His wife was screaming. And he's talked about how there is this almost exaggeration. I don't mean to put words into your mouth here now, Jamie, but of the violence, and an ad preys on that. And it's very politically effective because we all fear that kind of violence. And even you and your wife now appreciate how that's the world we live in. It might not be everywhere. Still work and come downtown, but maybe it's a reminder of how random and violent a city can be. That's fair, isn't it, Jamie?
I think that's completely fair. And I think the question is, you know, how do we live with our a sort of rational fear, you know, based on the realities that you just described,
right,
and not let it run away with us.
Right. Right. Well, there it is, isn't it? Because it's okay to be fearful. These things really happen. Now, where's the context? Where's the reality? A 30-second commercial for governor has no interest in that. You notice they don't say, here's what we're going to do about that. And to my way of understanding, they haven't announced their plan to cut down on crime in Chicago.
I think it's an invitation to fear. You know, it was that ad is meant to provoke. I mean, in a way, and I think I say this in the piece, it's kind of a heartless exercise in exploiting our empathy. You know, how can you not feel for that woman, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, you feel immediately, but to exploit those feelings without offering perspective, prescriptions, context is a really dangerous game.
So then if you're trying to win the governor's race, you don't run that ad?
Yeah, you know, I called it a dark art, right? I mean, I think again, I think it's part of a really ugly tradition in American political life. I think, you know, it would be honorable not to run it. I think there are ways of bringing really sharp and effective criticism, you know, in terms of various policies. I think just a blanket open appeal to fear is, you know, should not. I mean, obviously, it's an exercise, a legitimate exercise of the First Amendment.
Right.
I think it's really, really shabby and reprehensible as a political practice.
A couple of stations in town have chosen not to run the ad. Just here's a text. 815 said, when I saw the screaming clip, I sent it to my daughter with a reminder that women are always potential prey. You and your wife, have you made plans to leave the city? Are you moving out of the neighborhood?
No, on the contrary. And, you know, I think that, again, it goes back to what we're capable of together and how at risk we are alone. You know, I think what has tended to happen broadly in the society is rather than, you know, collectively working towards broader public solutions, people have increasingly withdrawn and looked for kind of private solutions to public problems. And the way I put it in the piece is really everything turns on how broadly or narrowly we define the neighborhood. You know, if we're concerned about safety in our neighborhood, does that mean really just pulling in our boundaries around ourselves, wrapping our lives, you know, with barbed wire? And I would say thereby being really, at that point, why do you live in a great city? I mean, your existence is so impoverished when that happens. Or do we think more broadly? You know, you mentioned the postscript to the article, yeah. the close of the article. So, you know, I think one of the great dangers, and it's a particular danger in a city, you know, as hyper-segregated as ours, just structurally, is that, and we've seen this again and again, not just in Chicago, but nationally, as fears of crime increase, there is, you know, a strong tendency, if we don't inoculate ourselves against it and you know, work against it, to sort of see whole populations and whole neighborhoods of the city as sort of dangerous others. Not to see them as neighbors, but to see them as the source of danger.
Well, let me read the last paragraph in your piece. You wrote, 2 weeks after my wife and I were robbed at gunpoint, a woman named Simone, how I wish I had gotten her last name, and her 10-year-old daughter pulled up in front of our building. They had driven from the west side to return my wife's driver's license and a couple of credit cards she had found discarded on the street. The child proudly told us that her mother was going to mail the cards, but she had persuaded her mother to bring them to us. The simple act of neighborliness restored something for us. I'm sorry, Simone said to my wife as we parted, about whatever you went through. And that's a lovely touch to a dark story about the dark arts of campaigning.
But I think what it also, what I, you know, would leave your listeners with is this question of neighborliness. I mean, you know, Simone and her daughter could easily have just sort of noted and disregarded the driver's license they found on the street. Instead, they, you know, made what probably was a 20-minute drive from the west side, sought us out at our address to return them. I think what that represents for me is a really critically important principle, is that we are neighbors, that neighborliness is a verb rather than a noun. You know, we're not neighbors because we live on a certain street in a certain place.
Yeah. It's something we should do. Yeah.
We become neighbors by treating one another as neighbors. And this was an instance of that. And, you know, I don't know specifics of, you know, about Simone's situation, but I wouldn't be surprised if when she walks out her door in the morning, she's a good deal more likely to confront somebody with a gun than we are.
Sounds like she is closer to the source of that crime. Jamie Calvin is the founder of the Invisible Institute. In 2021, they won the Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting. And we are out of time today, but it's a most interesting context, and you can find it on the archives of the Tribune as well. Nice to talk to you, Jamie. Let's visit again someday. I wish you and your wife well, and thanks for telling us that story.
Thanks for having me.